And that beat's been going for 40 years, even when her family had doubts.
My family at the beginning were like, uh-uh. My brothers and sisters were trying to convince my mom not to let her do that. They were like, she needs to go to school. And I'm like, but it's what I want to do.
She was working to build her career, but at the same time was quietly battling cancer.
I get a lot of responses like, you were so brave, and a lot of people that went through it and had to hide it back in the day. A lot of artists. You'd be surprised.
She's celebrating 40 years of hits. Singer, performer, star.
Hey, hey, this is Lisa Lisa, and you will see an episode of myself on The Pulse. Check it out.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Cool people doing cool things. And we've been on a pretty fun trend lately. I've been getting to talk to people whose music I'm actually still listening to in my car as I'm going different places, or while I'm working on this home renovation project, I'm blasting their music around the house. So this has been fun. Today, Lisa Lisa celebrating her 40th anniversary. Whoa, joins us on The Pulse. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you? And thank you for that.
Absolutely. I appreciate you spending some time with us. That's pretty cool to be able to sit back and go, I've been doing it for 40?
40 years. I say it and it sounds crazy to me, but I'm so happy. So, so happy.
Are you still, you're still loving this?
I am. There's nothing else that I would see myself doing. I can't do anything else but this. So I appreciate all the fans and everyone for, you know, keeping us out there.
It's crazy. And we're going to walk through kind of the whole journey and getting started. But it's crazy because I always kind of joke about when you talk about your career and you're looking forward, it's tough to see yourself doing anything for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. But when you get a chance to reflect on it, what does that feel like?
I feel blessed, you know, and now that my children can be on this journey with me, it's even better. You know, I thank all the fans, and I thank all radio and TV and all of that, because y'all keep us out there. You know, y'all are the big help, you know, to keep our sound moving. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm overwhelmed.
Us and the remakes, people taking your stuff going, I want to sing that. I'm going to go with it. So that's all fun. It's a really interesting story. So let's take a walk way back. So getting started, you weren't necessarily a musical family, were you?
Well, my mom and my father were in a parranda. That's a band in Puerto Rico. Okay. And that's how they used to, you know, get food. They would go to people's doors and knock, and you know, they would get paid in food back in the day. And my mom always loved music. My mom, when she got to the States, got to New York, she used to run the church choir in San Benito, St. Benedict's Church. And we were called Hijas de María, Mary's Daughters. And that's how I started music.
Okay, so there was the musical family, but the expectation was not. I read somewhere that I mean, you've got multiple siblings.
You know? I'm the youngest of 10. There you go.
Right. And they were all like doctors, lawyers, like professionals. You're the musician.
Yeah. Mostly teachers and lawyers. Okay, is what my brothers and sisters decided that they wanted to do. But all I wanted to do was music, you know, and my family at the beginning were like, uh-uh. No, they were. My brothers and sisters were trying to convince my mom not to let her do that. They were like, she needs to go to school, have something to fall back on, because there's no money in music. And I'm like, but it's what I want to do. And if it wasn't for my mother to push me, I would have never been here today. So
here jokes I am. On them. We got 40th anniversaries. That's what's up. So it was clearly a good decision. But that had to be challenging when you have so many folks and you talk about, I don't know if it's challenging upbringing, but humble, you know, upbringing.
Oh, very humble, you know, upbringing.
And worked very hard to get to that level of success. And you're like, I'm going to sing. They're like, uh-uh.
I, I used to sneak out of the house. I used to steal my sister's clothes and makeup and just go up to Ninth Avenue and, beg the little bar restaurants that have li had live bands to please, please, please let me sing. And they used to pay me like $10 or $20. Back then, that was a lot of money. And I would bring that to the table and be, Mommy, look, look, look. And she'd be like, oh my God, my brothers and sisters are like, Yeah, no.
That's a lot of get up and go for a kid to go
Yeah.
figure out how to do this. Keeping in that same kind of mindset or that same story. So again, it's the internet. So I always have to be careful of,
I know.
confirming what is being said. But the story goes that at 13, you're in nightclubs auditioning to make bands.
Yeah, I used to sneak out. I'm telling you, I was doing everything that I could to. I heard, Madonna got discovered at the Funhouse by Jelly Bean Benitez, and I was like, wait a minute, I want to do this too. So I went there and I snuck in and got my cassette. I went up to the DJ booth and I handed him my cassette. I don't think he ever remembered that because he never spoke on it. I never got a phone call again. Though now today we're good friends. but I was determined as a kid. Absolutely.
So what was the break? So you're determined, you're singing for $10, you're going to the different clubs. I mean, you're hustling as a child. When does it become more than a hustle?
When I met the guys from Cult Jam, I met Mike at the Funhouse. I was told, that this guy, a friend of mine, introduced me to Mike and said that this guy was, a roadie for Full Force and they were looking for female vocalists. And I went in there and I'm like, hey, I can sing. And he said, oh, yeah. And I said, yeah. He gave me a phone number. And I think it was the following week on a Tuesday that I was in the recording studio with them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And then how old are you at this point when you were doing that?
I'm recording, I'm 15.
Really?
Yeah.
So going into clubs, auditioning, and bold enough to approach successful folks, and that worked. Like that got you into the band.
Yeah, I think I listen, I'm a true believer that when you want something bad enough, you make it happen. And I was gonna do that. I mean, I'm the youngest of 10. So I was able to experience through my brothers and sisters. They were the hustlers, and I saw everything that they went through and the mistakes that they made. Thank God I was able to learn from that. So it was about making it happen.
So you're in the recording studio, 15, you meet them, you say, I can sing. They're like, prove it, you do. You're in the recording studio. Is that when life changed, or is that just the start?
That was just the very, very beginning because in one night we recorded, I Wonder If I Take You Home and Can You Feel the Beat? And Full Force already had this very small record label interested in putting that one song on a compilation album that was being shipped overseas. And it was titled Breakdancing. And it happened. They put us out there, and it took about a year and a half to 2 years to get brought back here to the States. And when it did, it hit hard. Thank you, God.
And it really did. And so then you're 15, 16, you're kind of going through that process. You're recording now, so you're a recording artist. I imagine your family's giving you a little bit of a break. They're like, oh, she's really doing this.
I'm still working, still. I still have my job folding clothes at Benetton because I was afraid, what's going to happen? I gotta make a pay because, 10 of us, my mom, single mom, taking care of all of us, we had bills to pay. So I was going to help out. And I remember that the manager of the store had to call Full Force and the record label and say, you got to get her out of here because people started realizing who I was.
Really? So it was
Yeah.
blowing up like that overseas, then it starts making its way back, and you're still working at the Benetton.
I had to.
That's nuts. But so you were getting to the point where people at work were recognizing you, but from
Yeah.
a financial and life situation, you still needed to be there.
I still needed to be there to help pay bills.
Wow.
I did.
Yeah,
And I
and
did it.
you hear those stories. It's interesting because we got a chance to talk to several people who have similar stories. And for
Yes.
people who, never really experienced that, it's kind of eye-opening. I mean, the industry has changed a lot, But to think you have the level of success that people are recognizing you, but the success hasn't necessarily caught up to the finances at that point.
Took a long time for that to happen. A very, very long time. And for me, finding that out was a real struggle, and was painful. Was very hurtful because, you know, I didn't know everything that was going on. And it wasn't until I finally met Toni Minaj, and she opened my eyes to a lot and pulled me out of that storm. And I kept it moving. I'm still fighting to this day.
Oh, yeah. So really. So I saw a picture on social media, you and CeCe Peniston. And she was actually on the show as well and told a similar story about the struggles of having something that millions of people are familiar with, still getting millions of streams. And she kind of saw a royalties check, I guess, that represented millions and millions of views. And it was like some ridiculously low amount of money. Now, and that was kind of the eye-opening experience you had as well.
Yeah, because, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know what I was signing. And you sign your life away. You don't realize anything until, you know, you become aware of all the business part of it. You know, things happening and you're wondering, well, why? And then you start asking questions. And it wasn't until years later, after I decided to sever ties with certain individuals, that I got to read that contract and was like, you got to be kidding me. I didn't know this because, truth be told, I didn't have my own lawyer. I did not. You know, they had a representative, and, you know, that representative represented all of us. And, you know, it was to their advantage, not to mine.
Yeah, it's still, and I don't want to dwell on that because we've got 40 years of successes. I just think that those stories are really interesting. The guys from New Edition were on, and they talked about going on an international tour and playing in front of sold out stadiums and staying at 5-star hotels while they were touring, people loving them, waiting for them in the lobby of the hotel. And then at the end of the tour bus dropped them back off in the projects.
I was on that tour with them.
Were you really?
I was there. Yes, I was part of their show. I was their opening act for many years. And yeah, it's so true. You get home and it's back to reality. Getting that garbage paycheck, running up to an accountant's office, getting a little crappy paycheck and not knowing what the hell's going on. And not knowing till years later that I got to fight for mine. Got to fight for mine.
Yeah, platinum records, platinum albums, and still working at Benetton. No disrespect to Benetton. I used to like Benetton clothes, but just saying. So when did it change? I mean, there at that point, and you start talking about those first couple of hits, there were a series of those, hit, you know. So when did it become, all right, I really am doing this, and it has changed my life, not just for the love of it, but because it's now, I'm getting the recognition I should.
I'm going to say recently, I feel that I'm getting the recognition that I should. I really am not a person that, you know, I don't trip on that. I don't think about those kinds of things because all I want to do is get on a stage and perform. That's all I ever wanted. But, you know, I want to be taken care of. I feel that we really hit the crossover, you know, when I finally got to do Radio City.
Okay.
First time I ever did Radio City, I was like, oh, damn, I finally did something. Because I remember being that little girl walking with my mom up to, you know, 6th Ave and seeing that building and saying, oh, my God, one day I want to see my name in lights. Jumping off that bus, that tour bus, begging the bus driver, can you just stop here? Because it was the last show, the last gig that we had to do. I jumped off. It was about midnight, I think. And I looked up and I kissed the ground because I was like, I'm doing something right. I am, because this is home.
Wow. Like, the stories are cool. So we're talking about, and we'll keep going, but we're talking about the 40th anniversary. So we actually, here at TD Pavilion at The Man, Friday, August 8th, in Philly. Our national audience, you're going to have to catch her at another place. But we're talking about this here in Philly, 40th anniversary. How did this all come together? Because I'm looking at, again, people I'm still listening to now, and you all just decided to come together.
Oh, wow. I was having a conversation with Toni, and she was like, it's 40 years. It's the anniversary. We got to do something. So we started talking with PC&G, and that's Alan Beck's company. And he said, we should do this 40-year anniversary tour for I Wonder If I Take You Home. That talk, which happened about a year and a half ago, came to fruition. Here we are, asking people that I love dearly, who are friends of mine, to jump on this tour with me. And it's major, and it's hitting hard, and we're out there. Just everybody, please just look on my website, therealLisaLisa.com, and you can find all the information you need for that tour. This, for me, I think this is what's tapping me on the shoulder saying, you did this.
Really? So this 40th anniversary tour is the thing that's making you emotional and feeling like I'm doing this.
Still to this day, you know what it feels like to be on a stage and see your fans and the fans' children and the fans' children's children. And there are kids out there that remember Taina, me being the mom on the show Taina. And they're like, it's crazy. It's overwhelming to see those fans still out there following us.
So in Philly, Exposé, Color Me Bad, Montel Jordan, Sugar Hill, The Jets, Tag Team, Candyman, everybody coming together. It's like a mixtape on tour.
That's it. That's exactly. We want to make you feel like you're back there, you know, take you back there to that time where there was nothing but great music and camaraderie and, you know, neon and bangles and a lot of hairspray. Just come up to the stage with us.
You say that you kind of reached out to folks. I'd love to be a fly on the wall. So what was the response like when you start reaching out to them and say, we're going to do this. We're getting the team back together. It's like the old school days. Remember when they used to do, I'm a radio station kid. I remember all of my father used to manage radio stations. So when they do like the Superfest or the all day kind of stuff that was going on and you just went all day. Like this kind of feels like that.
That's exactly how it is. That's what I wanted. I remember Superfest and, you know, I remember our very first tour was with Ice-T and Ice Cube and the Force MDs. And that's the feel that I wanted to get. That's what I needed. And, you know, just to pick up the phone and call all my friends and them just be so with it, you know, and every time I see them, it's hugs. We give hugs to each other, family on the road.
It was different then. So my father used to manage WDAS here in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And so all of those, the old school DJs then, and, you know, the Butterballs of the world and Mimi Brown Doug Henderson and all of those were kind of my childhood. But I also remember the artists coming to the station, right? And you would be there, and it was a different time. You would come there, you would hang out, you would be there in the studio. You know, it was just a different energy.
It really was, because we didn't have social media. So you had to be boots on the ground. It was about going and promoting your stuff and you know, hand to hand, you know, here's the record, please play it for me, that kind of thing. And man, those were the days. Those were the days we hung out with the DJs and got up there and did all this via radio. Record stores, remember record stores, going Tower Records or the mom and pops and going in there and doing sign-ins, you know, and it was the best, man, the best.
So this is still, so was that kind of the response when you put it out there? Did everybody have that similar, like, what? We're going to do this.
Yes, absolutely. And it's so great to get that feeling back and know that we're putting in the work, man, just because we want to be able to entertain the audience and take them there. I want to take you back.
So tell us what we're going to see. Just like the old Superfest, everybody doing just a little something.
Yes, everybody's going to be up on that stage and they're going to take you there with all the hits, and it's going to be continuous. act after act after act, getting up on that stage. And yeah, with the band, the dancers, and the background singing, I'm so ready.
You can tell you're excited about this and
really am. I
Philly
really am. I
and the
love it.
tour's it's going other places, right? You're not just Philly.
No, not just Philly. I'm all over. All
Okay.
over till the end of the year. We are all over. That's why I say everybody just go on the website, therealisalisa.com, and you can find all the dates there. You know, and you can even buy your tickets there.
Because I want people, we're based in Philly, but our show airs nationally, and I want them to be able to take advantage of this as well.
Yes,
Because there's
please.
people who are all sitting there going, "Oh, I remember the concert came to town. I still love the music. I still want to go out there and get that energy." Did you
Yeah.
ever think, and I talked to you earlier about 40 years, in your wildest imagination, when you were sitting there trying to lay this all out, did you ever think that you would have had the generational staying power, to have done this like this?
No, sir. I never thought that it would be so well respected and well received for many, many, many years. Never had that thought. All I was this little girl from Hell's Kitchen that wanted to get up on a stage and sing for people. That's all I ever wanted to do. So, you know, for it to be going this long, man, thank you to the fans. I'm telling you, they keep us moving.
Wow. You had a Lifetime movie, right?
Yes.
Kind of doing that. And in again, kind of doing some research. And I'm curious because you keep finding things out, right? So at one point, when you're kind of at the height of this, still trying to do your thing, you had some really, really serious health issues
Yes.
that you were going through at the time that you had to hide. You tell the story, because you know it, I don't, that you didn't want to give up on your dream, but you had really serious health cancer struggles
Yes.
that you had to hide.
I had to hide it. I was so afraid that it would be taken away from me. I was getting from being tired, you know, and I was getting such bad feedback from certain individuals, and I was being asked, you know, are you pregnant? Why are you sleeping all the time? What's wrong? I was sick, and I finally had a little time and went to a doctor, and I was diagnosed with ductal carcinoma, and I begged them, the doctor and the nurse, to please allow me to do this somehow where I can continue to do my work because I needed to work. I needed to do it. You know, I didn't have anybody else to help my family, you know, financially. I had to keep going. I had to keep moving. So they helped me to do that. And I was on the road with a pack and chemo and on the stage, at the side of the stage. I remember keeping an oxygen tank because I would get so sick, you know, and I didn't care. I was going to make it happen. I was going to make that move to continue to do my work. But again, it was difficult because I wasn't allowed to do a lot of things, you know? And I was afraid that if I said anything, they would just take it all away from me. They wouldn't allow me to work.
What now, when you share it, what's the response you get from people? I mean, my response is, wow. Like, people who cared about you and loved you couldn't help you because they didn't know. And you just kept trudging along.
I get a lot of responses like, you were so brave, and a lot of people that went through it and had to hide it back in the day. A lot of artists, you'd be surprised. A lot of them were sick. And they say thank you. A lot of them say thank you because it's just about bringing awareness. You know, get checked early. Please get checked, be it man or woman, okay? Because men get it too. Get checked, you know, and take care of yourself. But know that you're not alone, and know that, you know, you can do this, because it was a struggle to be able to do that. I remember hitting every city and going to a doctor, because I had a great nurse and a great oncologist that worked with me on this tour. And every city that I hit, they found a place for me to go and get my medicines, you know. So it can be done. It's so much easier now.
Well, and you're here and celebrating 40th anniversary, and we're going to have an entire party at multiple places.
Yes.
People can say thank you and enjoy the celebration in all the cities throughout. So that's where what we take from that. But I do think it's just an amazing story of resilience in continuing forward.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I appreciate all of this time. We have a couple of things that we do to end every episode of The Pulse, because the theme of this show is use your voice for good. You've been kind of talking about, you know, the ways that you have had to do that your whole journey. But when you hear that phrase, what does it mean to you?
It means to keep your head up and keep it moving. Resilience, the want and the need to, for me, is the want and the need to entertain my audience and my music. It's my blood flow. I can't ever stop it. I don't see myself doing anything but. So if there's something that you want in this life, trust and believe that the man upstairs is going to allow you and help you to make it happen. Believe that.
I appreciate you spending this much time. Lisa is on tour, the 40th anniversary Take You Home tour, coming to the TD Pavilion at The Man here, yes, in Philadelphia, Friday, August 8th. But you can see it all throughout the country. Maybe you want to go a couple times. Whole bunch of people will be joining her, like the old school concerts we all used to love. I appreciate you. And I'll be sitting there in the crowd, all cried out. I'll be, yay, talking about, I'm so sorry. And then you can say, apology not accepted.
You got it. You got it. You and me.
It's the whole thing. We'll be all cried out together.
Over you. There you go.
Yes. I got nothing else. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast with Lisa today. I feel like the last couple episodes I've been kind of fanboying. Like, listen, I'm old school, so I will sit back and listen to that type of music. I told the story of growing up as a kid at some of those all-day Superfest concerts and people coming into the radio stations and meeting them. And a lot of those people had that Lisa cool, positive community interaction type of energy. So this was just fun for me. I hope that it was for you as well. You can hit like, follow, subscribe, whatever it is on your screen, so you get a notification every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out. I also encourage you to download the Fox Local app. Whole bunch of episodes with anybody that you could think of is right there on demand. And take us with you with the Fox Local app. And hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I always love hearing from you. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I leave you today as I always do, reminding you, whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.